So it was right before the Sabbath.
And as we heard in the reading, Joseph, who is from the town Arimathea, requests from Pilate that he takes custody of Jesus' body. Now, Pilate has a tendency to trip over his own feet a lot when dealing with the Jewish people. But he gets this one right. Not only because having bodies just kind of strewn about pollutes the land, it actually makes it unclean, which makes things complicated for Passover. But it's also really important for a first century Jewish person, as well as modern observant Jewish people, to properly care for a body after the person has died. That body was made in the image of God, and so they want to take that seriously. Jewish historian from the first century named Josephus actually tells us of this happening in a couple of other places. So it's rare, but it happens. Curiously, Joseph, being from Arimathea, is really fascinating because we have no idea where that is. We just don't. And I bring this up for apologetics reasons. Sometimes, you know, people who are very brave on the keyboard online like to point out, oh, we don't even know where that is. See, he made it up. When really it doesn't make sense to make up a town when you're writing this about and to people that would know you're lying, if that makes sense. It just doesn't make any sense. And curiously enough, we didn't even know where Nazareth was until my lifetime. So there's plenty of other things to discover. Again, that's a little bit of apologetic stuff. So Joseph was in some way a disciple of Jesus. And he was on the ruling council, the Sanhedrin. And he was not the only one who would fall into the pro-Jesus camp. The other that we know of would be Nicodemus. It's very, very likely. In fact, I would bet everything I have on it that Nicodemus, like Joseph, also did not consent to Jesus' death. I have a hunch that they're not the only ones. I would think Gamaliel also. And the reason why that's important is that Joseph, and Nicodemus is there, Luke just either doesn't know or doesn't care. The reason why this is important is that he was following Jesus with the understanding that Jesus was the one that they've been waiting for. There had been several others who came before Jesus and who came after Jesus who likewise made that claim. In fact, there were about a dozen. And they all died. And when they died, their followers realized, oh, he was not the one. So something still compels Joseph to bury Jesus. Clearly, Jesus was a likable person. He's a very compelling person. So, I mean, if you love somebody, even if it turns out they're not exactly who you thought they were, you still love them. You still care about them. And so he still sought to look after him, as well as the women. And the women are kind of the unsung heroes, except Luke has a tendency to sing about them. Because part of the preparation, or part of preparing a body for burial, is the ointment, using of oils and spices, ointments. I mean, it's kind of gross, but to cover the smell. But they didn't have enough time. They could prepare them, but once that sun sets, Shabbat, Sabbath, has started. And so, as Luke very poignantly points out, because of the commandment, they did no work. They rested, meaning they were going to have to wait a day to properly finish preparing Jesus' body. That's Sabbath. It's the day of rest, obviously. And that cuts all the way back to the beginning of the Hebrew Bible, the Old Testament. God rests on the seventh day. And I've probably talked about this before. God rests after creating the world, not because he's tired. I think we can all agree that whatever God is like, he doesn't get tired. Because rest for an ancient Israelite was not about fatigue. It was about presence. When God rests on the seventh day, creation, like the world, the earth, our home, became sacred. It essentially became a temple, the place of God's dwelling. And then the Israelites were later commanded that because God rested on the seventh day, you should too. And so that raises a lot of questions. Like, what's the connection there? Okay, God rested, so his presence came down, and so I rest, I cease. There's kind of some wordplay going on there that I won't get into. And I think the wisdom for Sabbath is that it ensures that we understand that the world is not going to come to a halting stop just because we don't work. Like this, I don't know if this is an American thing. It was definitely more of an issue in California, and especially in Silicon Valley, where we tend to just work constantly. I already have a meeting on my day off on Friday this week, so I count myself among the guilty. And I think part of that is that somewhere in the backs of our minds, we just think that everything is going to come to a halt, or the world, our world, or whatever, our vicinity is going to fall apart if we don't do these things. And Sabbath is about taking our hand off of the metaphorical plow, recognizing that God is present and God is in charge, and I am not, and the world does not depend on me. That's an important lesson for a human being. Now, there's a problem, of course, because the commandment just says don't work, just like God didn't work. And I'm paraphrasing, of course. And don't let anyone in your house work. Okay, so what is work? And the ancient sages spent inordinate amounts of time trying to figure out what that meant. Like, if you pick something up, is that work? Well, no. What if it's really heavy? Careful. Well, can I carry it? No, you really shouldn't. Can I walk a certain distance? Yeah, but after a certain point, it's too far, and that's work. And you can't light a fire. You can't cook. You can't combine things to make a third. It goes on and on and on. The idea being, in a heartfelt way, not to work. Forcing yourself to engage in Sabbath rest. This is not a bad thing. It's a challenge for us, especially in the modern world. Evidently, it was a challenge in the first century because they had crazy detailed rules about what you could and could not do. There's a book written by a journalist named A.J. Jacobs. He's out of New York, or at least he was at the time of writing. He wrote a fabulous book that I really recommend to everybody. It's called My Year of Living Biblically. Now, A.J. Jacobs describes himself as Jewish, but Jewish in the sense that Olive Garden is Italian. In other words, not really. But for whatever reason, as this experiment, that he does on himself. He spends a year trying to live the commandments of Torah as literally as possible. And it's a real fun, occasionally insightful read. And one of the things that he struggled with was Sabbath. I mean, he lives in New York and he's a journalist. You're not slowing down. Like, that is a life that I would never want. And as luck or whatever would have it, he finally was forced to take a Sabbath rest for a few hours when he accidentally locked himself in his bathroom. And I guess his phone wasn't there or something, so he couldn't call anybody, he couldn't call his wife. So he was stuck in his bathroom just hanging around. And he said it was an amazing experience. He was forced to rest. And things kind of quieted down. Then his wife came home, unlocked him. I can't remember, but probably laughed at him. And then he immediately went back to his busy life, which was the opposite of restful. In fact, Sabbath was so important for both first century and a modern Jewish person that the rules and the sense of kind of guilt and public shaming can get pretty intense if you don't follow Sabbath. But it's still a really good thing to take a moment and rest. Now, with all of that in mind, do you think that Joseph and the women rested that night? Not a chance. They endured the trauma of watching the person that they love get tortured publicly and then die. And then Joseph had to go and throw himself on the mercy of Pilate, who himself is an interesting person. And then take the body of this guy that they thought he was the one, but they also just loved him. And they prepared his body, put him in a tomb. They had everything else ready to go, but the sun had set. There's no rest that night, or the rest of that, or the next day, which is actually Sabbath. Anybody who has lost anybody or endured immense hardship in the wake of those moments, you don't rest. The grief is just overwhelming. Like, I know I don't sleep in those times. But I think we can back off on that and broaden it even more. You know, have you had the experience where, you know, tomorrow is going to be a hard day and you just know it? You know what your calendar looks like. You know what your schedule is. You know the meetings that you have to have, and like right in the middle is a really, really hard conversation that you know is coming. Do you rest that night? No, I don't. Maybe y'all are more mature than I am. In fact, there's that dread. Like, it's crazy how all of these things seem to conspire against us to prevent us from resting. And I can just imagine Joseph and these women, be Mary and Martha probably, and Peter and Matthew and Judas, not Iscariot, as Luke likes to point out, which I would bet that's how he identifies himself for the rest of his life. Man, they didn't rest. They had to, but what are you going to do? Now, Sabbath, in the period of time between the Hebrew Bible, the Old Testament, and the New Testament, had come to take on other meaning. And the ancient sages and rabbis would eventually come to this conclusion that when Messiah comes, it will be as if all of creation breathes that sigh of relief. It'll be like all of creation celebrates Sabbath. Which is why the Apostle Paul, as he is writing his magnum opus, the book of Romans, says that all of creation is waiting for the revelation of the children of God, redeemed by the Messiah. Like all creation breathes the sigh of relief. He is drawing on Sabbath language because he's so tapped into that world. And there's a really intense irony that this, at their lowest point, Jesus' disciples start their Sabbath with no rest. And then that the morning after that Sabbath, like, for example, in the book of John, is very clear when he says, on the first day of the week, this is a new week. Just like creation is one week, and then now, on the first day of this new week, and then he starts peppering the word new into everything. That Jesus is raised from the dead. And then suddenly that gives his death a meaning that nobody saw coming. It is not in any writings within kind of the Jewish world that at this time that the Messiah would die for anybody's sins. That it makes sense looking back, but nobody has that idea at this time. And so suddenly they have Jesus staring them in the face. And when they have a chance to step back, they realize that his death did something. That he was the stand-in. He's the one who gave himself up. It was us that deserved that death. And he did it for us. And now that he's out the other side, he's conquered death itself. He's actually given, he is the first part of new creation, breaking into the old creation. And that new creation is meant to spread. And everywhere it goes, he can bring rest. Because in that moment, as Jesus comes back from the dead, it's not that the disciples are saying, oh, he came back from the dead. Oh, he is the Messiah. He fills all the check boxes. No, it's more that reality is not what we thought it was. What has God just done? And within, honestly, a few weeks, they are going to learn that Jesus has made a way for everybody to have a place at the table of God. One of the funny things about rest is that it can also teach us that we as human beings do not derive our worth, our value, or our identity based on what we do. If you choose to do that, good luck. It will not end well eventually. Instead, human beings are identified simply by who they are. And when God raises Jesus from the dead, and when he does the same within us, well, we're not defined by anything other than the fact that that same new creation is within us. That same animating spirit power that brings Jesus' body back to life is alive and well within us. And in fact, it is his spirit. It is the Holy Spirit. And we are forgiven, we are renewed, we are given a place at the table of God, we have a new name, and we are not defined by anything else. And when you encounter that identity, the more you internalize the fact that we are not defined, we do not derive our value or our worth from anything other than what Jesus has done for us. That's rest. That, to me, that is the only kind of rest. So as it turns out, the ancient sages were right, the Messiah brings Sabbath. But they had no idea to the extent God would bring it. Amen.